You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in a few minutes is this week's edition of Food Friday. First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. As the saying goes, home is where the heart is. But for writer BJ Hollers, it's a little more complicated than that. We can become deeply connected to our physical home, so moving and moving on can be a process.
As the saying goes, home is where the heart is. But for writer BJ Hollers, it's a little more complicated than that. We can become deeply connected to our physical homes, so moving and moving on can be a process.
While my family and I have cherished our time in Eau Claire, it's time for us to say goodbye. The boxes are packed, the papers are signed. All that's left is to bid you farewell as we embark upon the next chapter of our journey. A journey, I'm pleased to add, that will take us no further than 1.9 miles from our current home. Yet, sentimentalist that I am, any move, even one that lands us in the same zip code, leaves me awash with emotion. Over the past month, while attempting to box up our belongings, I regularly pumped the packing brakes to indulge in various unplanned detours down memory lane, including a writing worksheet I found crumpled in my 7-year-old daughter's room shortly before our scheduled move. She composed several sentences about the move, including, "My house is along the highway. I've been to my new house." But then, in a stunning twist, her declarative statements veered toward the philosophical. Why does the world move so fast? The moment she got home from school, I accosted her. "Where on earth did you come up with that line?" I asked, handing her the paper. "Duh," she said, rolling her eyes. "Only from every adult ever." If there's one thing adults do well, it's lamenting the fast passage of time. Unfortunately, we're less adept at finding ways to slow it. Let me be clear. I never wanted to move. Instead, I'd hoped to root myself as deeply to the land as our backyard river birch tree. But my wife had insisted that the children required bedrooms and bathrooms, and eventually, logic won the day. My begrudging agreement came with conditions. I demanded that our new house be within walking distance of our old house. I wanted to avoid all bidding wars, and I didn't want to sell our former house to just anyone. Such stringent conditions, I figured, would buy me a little more time. Instead, the universe conspired on my wife's behalf, rolling out a tailor-made red carpet that made short work of my conditions. One afternoon, the grandparents of a family friend mentioned that they were hoping to downsize. Their home was just the right size and just the right neighborhood, a mere 5,800 steps away from our current home. Within a month, we'd struck a deal. The only bidding war involved me demanding that I pay a little more to make things closer to fair. With 2 out of 3 conditions met, all that remained was finding the perfect buyers for our own home. This being a seller's market, I had the luxury of vetting all interested parties. Following an extensive 37-year process, I found the perfect people. Or rather, they found me. "Wait a minute," I said into the phone. "You mean to tell me that you and Dad would move here?" "Yes," my mother agreed. "There's nothing we want more." After missing one too many of their grandchildren's activities, my parents were anxious to make the 500-mile journey from Indiana to embark upon their own next chapter with us. Now, if this all seems a little too good to be true, it's because it is. I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop. Will the basement flood? Will the roof cave in? Whatever the price, we'll pay it. Because we have found not only the perfect house, but the perfect arrangement too. We lose nothing, and we gain grandparents. Was it Heraclitus or my 7-year-old who said, "The only constant in life is change"? Whomever it was, they were right. While change is scary, it's less so when you know it's coming. And since it's always coming, we ought never to be afraid. When one door closes, another opens. All the better when you've got familiar faces waiting within.
BJ Hollers is a writer, author, and assistant professor of creative writing at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org, on Facebook, and on Instagram. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
This is Central Time. Ramadan starts on Sunday. Ramadan's the ninth month on the Islamic calendar, and many Muslims fast during this time. Fasting happens from sunrise to sunset, so two meals are eaten each day, one at dawn, one at dusk. Traditional Ramadan foods include dates and lentil soups, but dishes vary all over the world. It's Food Friday, and our guests' Ramadan recipes have a mix of Indian, Pakistani, British, and other influences. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you getting ready to observe Ramadan yourself? What are your favorite foods as part of that? Or at the end of it, do you have favorite Middle Eastern and or South Asian foods? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Zeina Din is the author of the cookbook, Desified, Delicious Recipes for Ramadan, Eid, and Every Day. You can follow her on Instagram at Zeina's Bakes. Zeina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Can you tell us about the before sunrise and after sunset meals that go on during Ramadan? What is special about those?
So the before sunrise meal is essentially our breakfast, and it's like the final thing we can eat and drink before the fasting begins. And usually the meal will include things like long-lasting carbs, lots of protein, nothing too salty because you want to try and reduce, how thirsty you're going to get in the day. And then our evening meal, so the sunset meal, we also called iftar, which is our dinner. And really, you can eat anything at all, but usually it's dishes from your culture, so they could be rice dishes, curry, chicken, things like that.
And as I mentioned, you were just getting at there's a lot of variety. There are Muslims in countries all over the world. Are there foods that you found that everybody sees as part of the Ramadan repertoire, the Ramadan meals, or is it really different from one region to another?
I think every region has different cultural dishes. So I'm South Asian, I'm Pakistani, and we have a lot of curries and grilled meat, whereas someone from North Africa or the Middle East will have different types of rice dishes. But one thing which is common across most cultures is dates and rose syrup.
Let's start with those early day meals now. I understand your go-to breakfast during Ramadan is Turkish eggs. Tell us a little bit about this recipe.
Yes, I love Turkish eggs. It's such a simple dish and it's very high in protein. So it starts with a base of a really thick yogurt with a couple of poached eggs on top and then a chili butter. So it's traditionally a Turkish dish, but I've desified it, which means I've put my South Asian spin on it using a few more spices.
What are those extra spices?
Chili powder, garam masala, turmeric. And those three spices are key ingredients to a lot of South Asian dishes.
And then another breakfast is, I understand, souvian. This is a sweet dish, but there are noodles involved. It ends up being like a pudding, I guess?
Yeah, so that's stevia. And it's a very common dish, actually, and lots of different cultures have different ways of cooking it. But it's like a milky pudding. So imagine a rice pudding, but instead of rice, it's made with vermicelli noodles. And we often eat this actually for Eid, for breakfast. But you can also have it for dessert because it is quite sweet.
I want to step away from the recipes for a moment. Talk a little bit about how you started sharing Ramadan recipes on Instagram and how it ended up evolving into this new cookbook.
Well, it's a funny story, actually. So my Instagram page, Zeina's Bakes, I started when I was 16 as a school project, and this was about 8 years ago now. And then I actually fell into a tech career. So I worked at Facebook and Instagram and TikTok for about 5 years. And then 3 years ago, so during lockdown, I started a content series called Ramadan Recipes, where I cooked 30 recipes for 30 days of fasting. And it basically blew up online. I quit my job and I decided, let's just do food full time because that's my true passion. And I kind of went with the momentum and I kept sharing my recipes and some traditional recipes that have been passed down to me from my mum. And then I was approached by a book agent and I recently published Desified, and the rest is history.
Now let's go to the evening. Now I imagine after day of fasting, food sounds like a really good thing, right? The appetite is ready to rock after the day of fasting.
Do you know what? Funnily enough, because we've been fasting all day, well, for me personally, I won't speak on behalf of everyone, but I actually find it difficult to eat for that first meal. And obviously, you're starving. You really want to eat. You really want to indulge in your food. But you just have to ease into it because your stomach has kind of shrunk, your appetite has shrunk, and as the days go on, your stomach is getting smaller and smaller. But by the time it then comes to your morning meal, then I'm ready to eat. That's when I eat most of my food, actually.
Are there foods that, so when you're in that transition zone, like, I know I need to eat something, but I'm not feeling it just yet. Is there a good starter food that you like to go with?
So actually, the reason why dates are so important is not because, well, they're very good for you. First of all, they're high in fiber and high in sugar, so it brings your blood sugar level back up to where it should be quickly. But also, in our religion, our Prophet Muhammad used to open his fast by eating one or three dates. So it also has a religious significance there as well, which is why so many Muslims start their fast with dates.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about Ramadan recipes with Zeina Din, author of the new cookbook, Decified, Delicious Recipes for Ramadan, Eid, and Every Day. You can follow her on Instagram at Zeina's Bakes, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions? Do you want to know about traditional Ramadan and not-so-traditional Ramadan recipes? Are you getting ready to observe yourself? What kind of foods do you associate with this part of the calendar? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Zeina Din, author of the new cookbook, Decified, Delicious Recipes for Ramadan, Eid, and Every Day. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you observe Ramadan, you're getting ready to. Are there foods you associate with the morning or evening meals? Do you have questions for our guest about the kinds of foods that might be part of those meals? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Zeina, before we get back to some more recipes, I saw on your Instagram a bit of etiquette related to Ramadan. If people know someone who's Muslim and sees them eating during the day during Ramadan, I wouldn't think of doing this, but you make a point on your Instagram. Don't ask. There's a lot of reasons. They're very personal. Can you talk us through that a little?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think people have some misconceptions about Ramadan, but it's actually pretty flexible, I would say. Ramadan is fasting during Ramadan is compulsory for all healthy adult Muslims. So if you're a woman, for example, and you're on your period or you're pregnant or you're breastfeeding, you should not be fasting. Anyone in general, if you're in poor health or you're on some type of regular medication, you shouldn't be fasting. But the most important reason of all is that religion is personal and everyone is on their own journey. And we're not in a position to judge or question other people whether they're fasting or not, because Ramadan is a whole month and fasting is just one part of that. And the other parts are also equally as important, and that includes giving to charity and doing work in your community and praying often and kind of developing your relationship with God and stuff like that. So even if someone is not fasting, it doesn't mean that they're not observing Ramadan in other ways.
All right, let's get back to the food now. We're going to go to the end of the day now. One recipe you've got up there is the chili cheese garlic naan. This sounds fantastic to me, Zeina. Tell us a little bit about this recipe.
Listen, this recipe, if you are not a cook, if you don't consider yourself a chef, you have to try this because it's literally about four ingredients. So the naan dough itself is made of two ingredients, and that is self-raising flour and plain yogurt. From that point, you can kind of dress the naan however you want. And what I like to do is fill it with cheese and then brush over a garlic butter. But you can add some chili, you can add some vegetables, you can add a pizza base, whatever you want. It's so simple and so delicious.
And so naan, when I'm at a restaurant that serves it or sometimes it's packaged in stores, I love that naan bread. It's that easy to make, two ingredients. Tell us a little bit about how we make it.
Oh, you just cut off at the end there. What did you say?
Oh, tell us how. So we've got the yogurt. We've got the self-rising flour. How do we make that naan?
All you do is put equal parts of both ingredients into a bowl, mix it together. And also the great thing about this recipe is that you don't need to let it rest and you don't need to let it rise. You can cook it straight away.
Excellent. And then we just bake it or is it fried? How does that, what's the finish up there?
So you cook it on a dry frying pan. In South Asian households, we have a heavy bottom skillet called a tawa. But if you don't have a tava, you can just use any old frying pan with no oil, no butter. Cook it dry on one side for 30 seconds, then place it under the broiler, I believe you call it. But over here in the UK, we call it a grill. And each naan takes total 1 minute to cook.
I got to do this. Okay, I thought it was way more complicated than that. I will try that sometime. We've got a lot of ones we could go to. Let's try a sweet recipe now. This one, pretzel, chocolate, nutty, date bark. There's our dates again, but with some ingredients I love, pretzels and chocolate. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I took inspiration of this recipe actually from a viral trend that I saw on TikTok called date bark, where people are slicing and laying out dates and drizzling chocolate over the top and hardening it. And then they snap it, break it into pieces, which is why they call it date bark. But my date bark recipe has a layer of dates, peanut butter on top, then dark chocolate, because I don't usually like dark chocolate, actually, but it really contrasts with the sweetness of the dates. And then I lay a layer of salty, crunchy pretzels over the top. So it has sweetness, saltiness, gooiness, and crunchiness all in one.
We're talking to Zeina Din, author of the cookbook, Decified, Delicious Recipes for Ramadan, Eid, and Every Day. It's Food Friday. We're getting some great inspiration from the region. Let's talk a little bit about Eid. First of all, can you tell us what Eid is and how it's celebrated?
So Eid, we actually have two Eids in the year, but this Eid marks the end of Ramadan. And it's just all about family and food and sharing and, of course, praying. So usually the day in the morning, the men in the family or everyone in the family will go to the mosque, to their local mosque to pray. And then after that, you just spend time with your family, usually get dressed up in traditional clothes, have some delicious food. And some people like to go out to enjoy their evenings at a restaurant as well.
And as I understand it, I think of this kind of like, Polish Christmas Eve. If you're going to do food, this is when you're going to pull all the stops out and put out a lot of really interesting foods. Is that right?
Absolutely. All of the best recipes, the samosa, all of your pastries, all of your kebabs, the curries, the rice dishes, all of your favorite foods and the salad, all the extras. It's a massive feast.
And so what are some of your favorite things to eat and or cook for that Eid celebration?
Oh, God, I love to eat everything, personally. But one of my favorites will probably have to be a biryani, and we make it pretty much every single year. And if you don't know, a biryani is basically a rice dish, and it's layered of a spicy meat or chicken curry with layers of rice in between, and then it's all steamed together.
All right. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say it's usually served with a side dish of yogurt or a chutney and a salad.
All right. There's one more I wanted to look at. We've got an eggplant dish. You've got it as a keema stuffed aubergine. We call aubergines eggplants in the U.S. I don't know what keema is, though. Could you tell us what that is and how it works with the aubergine, the eggplant?
Yes, your pronunciation was perfect, actually. So keema is our name for spicy minced meat, and it's usually in the form of a curry, but you could also just use it as a term to describe minced meat in general.
So what kind of meats would go in there?
It could be anything. You could have ground chicken, you could have ground beef. Sometimes we use mutton and lamb, and that would be the keema.
Okay. And then it's stuffed the eggplant. Then is that baked ultimately?
It's baked, yes. So you stuff the keema into the eggplant and you sear it off so it just holds its shape and holds together. Then you lay it into a dish of a really garlicky tomato sauce and you bake it all in the oven together. So all of the meat juices and the aubergine all gets infused into the sauce and it's delicious.
And then let's end with another dessert you've got. And I understand this is a fusion of classic Indian and classic English desserts. Sticky toffee gulab jamun. Am I saying that right?
Yes, nearly. Sticky toffee gulab jamun.
And so what? I get the sticky toffee concept. Tell us about the dessert.
So gulab jamun is probably one of the most iconic and popular Indian desserts. And it's small balls of dough made of milk powder and they're fried. So kind of similar to a donut. And then authentically, they're soaked in a rose and cardamom syrup. But I skipped that step and basically soaked it in a sticky toffee pudding sauce instead to combine two of my favorite desserts.
Well, you had me at kind of like a donut. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And I wonder, just getting back to your Instagram, what kind of feedback do you get from people out there? Are there people swapping recipes or telling you, well, this is how we do it in our family or our community?
I think my followers and my Instagram page is a really nice community of people sharing recipes. And I'm from Pakistan, which is just one country in South Asia. So Everyone has their own way of cooking certain dishes. So I'll have Bangladeshi followers telling me how they do something in their family, and Indian followers telling me how they do something. So it's actually really nice to be able to share recipes and share notes.
Zeta, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
That's Zeta Din. She joined us on Food Friday to talk about her new cookbook. It's called Desified, Delicious Recipes for Ramadan, Eid, and Every Day. As we heard, recipes inspired by Pakistan, India, a little bit of England, and around the world there. You can also follow her on Instagram at Zeta's Bakes and find some good cooking inspiration for Ramadan and all the year long. Still love to hear from you. If this is part of your family tradition we've been talking about, if you're getting ready to observe Ramadan and have some food you want to tell us about, let us know. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And if you have a recipe to share, love to see it. I think I might try to make that naan recipe this weekend. I had no idea it was so easy, and I love that stuff.